Oh yeah,
It's so
but this
nice.
individual sponsors is what we can do.
Hi everybody, welcome to our weekly Tanya Share, Tanya in your daily life. Today I'm going to start off our class of talking a little bit about Lira Tova Bas Rachman. This class was started in her honor. She came here and brought her children here to experience the Kedusha of Mayan Yisrael. She was the type of person who saw spirituality, saw truth, saw goodness, and sought it out no matter what. What? Can you hear? Sorry.
Or maybe go closer.
I will project. If you think I need one, then I won't. You like stay in the back and see if I'm not projecting properly. So Liora was an incredible person who really, really sought spirituality and goodness and truth. She was a real truth seeker and wanted to bring that to her family. So she would bring her kids here. After she finished davening, she would come here for Rabbi Wolf's speech, or she would daven here too. And so the idea was we started this year in her honor, a year that's open to children coming and experiencing, hearing their neshama, hearing Torah, and Siddus. And that's something that we've been doing now for a year. Zisi does it alongside with me. And Baruch Hashem, it's been such an incredible year of learning and growth. And at the same time, since today is Liora's Yahrzeit, tonight is Liora's Yahrzeit. Just wanted to say a few words about her. So one thing that just keeps on coming into my mind is this one memory, and it's become like a loop of something that I think about all the time. I don't know about you, but I know for myself that I have repetitive thoughts all the time. I'll remember certain things that happened in my childhood or just certain memories. And now that it's become a habit to think that thought, it happens again and again and again, whether I like it or not. It's just a subconscious thought. And this one memory that I have of Lira has now become a subconscious repetitive pattern. And thank God it's a good one. So Lira was planning on coming to a retreat. I run retreats. I'm a marriage coach. And one of the things I do is I have a retreat, and she came to ours a month or two before she passed away. And before any woman comes on the retreat, I call them and I speak to them. What do they want from the retreat? What are they learning? What are they hoping to gain? And I also ask them, what is like a powerful moment for you, a moment that you really recognize Hashem, that you're extremely grateful for? What's something that brings you joy? And it was very vulnerable for her to share this. And I debated back and forth whether I want to share this with you, but I feel like it has given me so much. And I think now in Ayuma MS, she would want everyone to hear this. So she said, this is very vulnerable to share, but when I'm sitting in the car with all my kids, and all my kids are in the car, and we're just all contained together, and we're driving somewhere, to me, it's like a perfect moment. A perfect moment. It's just perfect. And there's something so beautiful about that concept, where she takes just an absolutely simple moment, something that you take for granted every single day. I spend hours with my kids in the car all the time. But now, whenever I'm in the car and they're all in there with me and it's just me and them, I'm constantly remembering Lira and the beautiful joy that she experienced just being in the presence of her children all together. So, with that in mind, it is the inspiration of today's class. It happens to simultaneously coincide with the parak that we're beginning. And I'm going to bring it together and you'll see how powerful and how impactful it is to be a person who takes a simple moment or a simple action and sees the truth, the godliness, the potential in that moment. And that's really what Lira was. She sought and lived the potential for so many moments. Just to share a few other things that are important to note here. I didn't realize this, but Lira was an absolute connector. She connected with people. She connected people. She sought connection. If someone was down, she would remember later on in the day that she saw that and check in with them. 3 days after something happened, she would check in. How did that go? How was it? How was your meeting? How was that interview? How is it going with your kid? I know you're struggling with something. Someone who deeply cared, who deeply connected with others' struggles, saw the potential in a relationship, in connection. It's like, it's a maturity, but it's a kindness and level of compassion that's deeper than I think most people experience. It definitely has been something that's been on my mind all year. It's not an exaggeration to say that. It's like, it's something I lived with all year, and God willing, will live with forever. But that level of compassion is something that truly inspired me. And again, seeing in another person or seeing in their struggle, the potential for connection, the potential for growth is something that you really lived for. And that's something we're going to be talking about today. So I wanted to highlight that. If anyone wants to share something about Liara, also I'd love to open up at the end of our class after we finish learning. I don't want to break a chazaka that we have of learning the Tanya, but if you'd like to share something, I think it's so inspiring to talk about someone, live with their memory, live with the beautiful values that she imparted to me, to us, to the world, and make sure to keep the midas that she had alive with us always. So this is like an invitation now, if you would like to share it at the end of class, we'd love to discuss that, hear that, make the space for that. So today we're up to Perek Zayin. I'm going to do a quick summary of things that we've been discussing up until now, just because some people haven't been here for every single class. We've gone through Perek Aleph through Vav when discussing the Tanya. What is the Tanya? The Tanya is a sefer written by the Bala Tanya, who wanted to give a gift to the world, a gift of how to live a life of service of God, how to live your life serving God. And he quotes from there a pasuk in Devarim, Kikar v'lach zavram ma'ayat b'ficha b'bavcha la'asaysay, referencing to the idea that it is close to you, it is within your ability to serve Hashem with ava and yira, with love and fear in your heart, which is a very high caliber of service towards Hashem. Most of us kind of are happy if we're able to get a few mitzvahs in, if we thought about him a few times throughout the day. And here, Moshe Rabbeinu is talking to Klal Yisrael and saying, it's within your ability, and this is obviously truth, this is Torah, it's within your ability to live a life of Torah and dedication where you are infused with love and fear constantly and in service of him constantly. How are we able to do that? So the whole Tanya is supposed to be a sefer dedicated to the Beinoni, to the intermediate person, to the in-betweener, the person who struggles, and it's supposed to help them. It's supposed to literally be a self-help book, how to get to that space of what it looks like to be in Avaida of Hashem. And we started with talking about your neshama, because before we start talking about Avaida and what we're supposed to be doing in this world, we have to start at square one. Who are you? And we spoke about neshama. We spoke about the fact that we have two operating systems. We have a nefesh elokis and we have a nefesh bahamas, a godly soul and an animal soul. And both of those operating systems are constantly vying for our attention. Where are we going to be approaching the world from? Are we approaching it from the operating system of a godly perspective? Or are we approaching our world from the operating system of the animal soul, which is not a bad perspective? It's just the perspective that God is hidden, he's concealed. It's not about him, it's about ourselves. So the character traits that I've been kind of repeating throughout, because they're so important to talk about, the character traits of the Nefesh HaBahamas are being kind of superficial, right? So the Nefesh HaBahamas doesn't want to go into anything too deeply. He's kind of short-sighted. He doesn't want to see that there's a God in the world. He wants to take care of himself. So there's the short-sightedness and there's the selfishness. It's all about taking care of my needs, kind of like an animal functions from a space of instinct and self-preservation. So the animal soul is in the same way, not really trying to plumb the depths of anything. And he's also just trying to make sure that he takes care of himself and his own experience. And the last character trait after short-sighted and selfish is anxiety. And is built into our system, into our animal soul, which we all have, to be filled with anxiety all the time. And that's kind of like a it's an offshoot of being short-sighted and selfish, right? If I'm in a constant state of not looking into the depth of things and I'm just taking care of myself, I'm in a state of fear. That's what it looks like. If I could look a little bit beyond, then I'm able to step into a space of seeing that there's a God in the world, that there's something beyond me, there's a higher power, but the Nefesh Bahamas doesn't want to look at that. So that's the experience of the Nefesh Bahamas. The Nefesh Elokis, the godly perspective, the godly soul, is one that is not short-sighted, right? So it has depth. It wants to see what's beyond. It's constantly searching for meaning. The godly perspective, the godly soul, is also altruistic. It's not stuck in itself and being selfish. It's about the other, something beyond itself. And the last characteristic, again, that's an offshoot of what it actually is an inner sense of calm. The Nefesh Elokis is never flustered. The Nefesh Elokis is never anxiety-ridden or fearful. It's in a very calm, tranquil, peaceful state all the time because its experience is a godly experience. So it doesn't have to feel like it has to carry the world on its shoulders or handle any situation because Hashem is taking care of it. So really important is to realize that we have two diametrically opposed operating systems and perspectives in our world. And if that's not complicated enough, we have to actually live with these two diverse voices vying for our attention all the time. So the anxiety is constantly there. That inner sense of calm and tranquility is always there. It's about where are we tapping into? Where are we deciding to operate from? Where are we putting on the glasses? Which glasses, which perspective are we going to be looking at the world from? So that's just basically catching us up to what we were talking about up until now. Then we went into neshama and the levushim of the neshama. I don't want to get into it too much because it's going to sound repetitive. But what's most important is let's get into Perek Zion, which is talking about different levels of God's energy towards this world. So the way that we look at the world is, of course, the belief that God vitalizes this world and he gives energy to this world. But we looked at two different types of energy. One energy is the Sitra Achra, which is called the other side. And one energy is Kedusha. What's the difference between Sitra Achra and Kedusha? Kedusha is where God's light is manifest, where you can see clearly that this is given life through God. Okay, and that mainly is Torah and Mitzvahs, because everything else in the world that you see seems to be hiding Hashem's manifest light. So everything else comes from the energy of Sitra Achra. Now, within Sitra Achra, there are two categories. There are Shalish Klipas HaTemeis, which are three impure Klipas, and then there's the Klipas Naiga. I'm sorry if this is a lot for people who have never been here before, but bear with me. What is klipa? Klipa means a shell. A shell means that there's something covering this. This entire world comes from the realm of klipa, a shell, a covering. You can't clearly see that there is a God in the world because everything is telling you that there is not. That means that everything comes from the other side, except for Torah and Mitzvahs, neshamas, deeply spiritual things where you could see godliness, you could see his manifestation. Now, there's two different pieces when it comes to klipa. There's klipa where the energy is coming from a place called the other side, where we gave the example last time, where if you can imagine giving a gift to someone you really don't like, right? So when you love someone, you give them that gift, you give them a hug, you hand it to them, you look into their eyes, you make eye contact, you give it with a card, pouring out your heart with all the love and care that you have towards that person. When you give a gift, because it's compulsory, it's something that you have to do for whatever reason, you kind of just leave it there for them. You know, you give it to them behind your back. The concept is that Hashem gives two different energies to the world. He gives energy in a way that his light is manifest. And then he also gives light in the world where he's giving it, right? He's obviously the only power and energy in this entire world, but he's giving it from a space of, it's not his love and his deep desire, and it's him facing you and giving you a hug. It's coming from a separate place, an otherness, okay? And that's how it gives space for us to see that there is an otherness. Because technically, if everything came directly from Hashem, we wouldn't be able to see a world. We would only see God. Okay, so what is Klipas Naiga? What is Shalish Klipas HaTemeis? Shalish Klipas HaTemeis are a klipa, a shell that is so strong that there's no way for us to redeem it. There's no way for us to reveal godly energy in it. So things that fall into that category are things that are, let's say, impure for us, right? So like, let's say eating something that is impure, we don't have the ability to eat that and elevate that, show the world that this is really godly energy. Then there are things that are neutral. That falls under the category of klipas nega. Nega means shine. So it's the shell that shines. What does that mean? It means that even though it's shining, the way I imagine is kind of like, I don't know if you've ever seen this, but like, have this like vision of like the world and then suddenly like lights coming out of it. It's, I don't know where that's coming from, but imagine a world and then suddenly there's like beacons of light coming out of it. It's a world, it's a shell. You don't see God, you see Earth. It's a planet, right? Klipas Nega is everything in the world that has the ability for us to manifest Hashem's light, reveal that there is a God here actually making this happen. So for example, any of the food that we eat, right? Or anything that is permissible for us to do. Everything really, except things that are forbidden. So let's say eating the soup that's in front of you now, it's kosher. It is made with love. Thank you. It's delicious. If we make a bracha on it, we're acknowledging that this is in existence because Hashem is desiring for it to be in existence, right? In that moment of making the bracha, you're elevating it by revealing and manifesting his light by this experience, as opposed to eating soup that is forbidden. There's no ability for you to actually show that this is soup that is in this world right now being created every single moment from Hashem. It just doesn't have the ability. It's not something that you could actually elevate. Okay? So Sholosh Klipas Tamias are things that we don't really want to engage in. Klipas Nega is our purpose. It's literally what we're here for. We're supposed to be making that klipa shine, okay? Those are just a few key words. The next thing that I want to just talk about, and these are just, this is just still catching us all up, is the concept of bittul. Bittul is almost like a technique, okay? It's something that we have in our tool set, our tool case. What am I? Toolbox, sorry. Toolbox. What is bittul? Bittul means nullification. What that actually means is a surrendering. When we surrender ourselves or we allow an object to surrender, what we're doing is we're revealing that it's not a cup just by itself, a cup. It's actually God deciding that there should be a cup in the world. What we're doing is we're pushing away the cupness of it, the otherness, and we're allowing the truth to shine. So what we're doing is, the technique is that we're making all the otherness that we're experiencing within ourselves or in the world, and we're making a space and we're allowing Hashem to be in that space. Of course, he's already in that space. Nothing can take Hashem away from the space, but we are in our perspective and our perception, we're allowing him to be revealed. That makes sense? Okay, so bittul is a technique that we could have for ourselves, and we do that every single day. Every single time we choose to make a bracha before we drink, we're acknowledging that there's otherness here. I could be just drinking this without making the bracha, and that would be just saying otherness exists and God doesn't exist. But when I choose to make the bracha, I'm pushing myself aside, my desire of immediately engaging with this water, and I'm acknowledging that God is making this water and he's giving this to me, and I'm grateful to him that he has provided water for me and sustenance for me. Okay, so bittul, that nullification, that surrender, is something that we can use as a tool to engage with this world and manifest as light and experience Kedusha. And that's one of the ways that we can experience Kedusha. Earlier, we spoke about other ways like doing mitzvahs and learning Torah and engaging our minds, engaging our emotions. Those are other ways of connecting and creating relationship with Hashem. Here, specifically, when we're talking about the realm of Klipas Nega, which is almost our everyday experience, this is what we're doing all the time, bittul would be the way to manifest Hashem's light. The opposite of bittul is something that in Hasidic terminology is called yesh. Yesh is isness. That's literally what it is. Yesh is isness. I don't think there's an English word for yesh. Yesh is something that is. It exists. And what we're working away from is the isness. We don't want to give and acknowledge the isness of this cup, that it exists. We want to acknowledge that God is making it exist, that without God, it wouldn't exist, right? So the yesh of myself, my isness, that I am because I've made myself to be who I am, that I exist because I decided to exist and wake up in the morning and that's why I exist here. That's all my yesh. That's all an opposition to his vitality, his the truth, really, of who I am. What am I? I am nothing other than Hashem keeping me in this world constantly. My existence here depends entirely on him. Every time I experience my yesh, myself, I'm not experiencing him and his self. Okay? So that's catching us up a little bit to what we're supposed to be talking about today. So when we see ourselves as self-sufficient beings, in ways we are not acknowledging the truth, which is that Hashem is the one who's sustaining us and keeping us alive and keeping us here. Now, a really important piece to bring out over here is that Perek Zayin is all about Klipas Nega. The important piece about Klipas Nega and the fact that it shines is that it's the in-between. Just like we're the in-betweener, Klipas Nega is that in-between energy. And what's fascinating about Klipas Nega is not just are we able to tap into it and acknowledge Hashem's presence when I acknowledge the cup of water that Hashem is sustaining every single moment, it is actually when I'm acknowledging it, right, Hashem's presence in this cup of water, it's actually moving, okay? So what happens is every single time I engage with Klipas Nega, I have the ability to tap into something. Either I'm tapping into it and it's raising me up. It's making me a more spiritual person. The Kedusha is enveloping me and I am in this cozy cocoon of Hashem's light. It's manifesting him and it's therefore raising me up to be a more elevated human being. Or if I engage with Klipas Nega, for example, and I drink a cup of water without making a bracha, it's taking my being and it's bringing it down to the level of Shalosh Klipas HaTameis. So not only is it affecting the experience that I'm having, but it's affecting me as a person. Think of it as like energy, right? I think, if I remember correctly from high school, energy is something that is constant, right? So if you take something, the energy is just going to manifest itself somewhere else. It's always moving. It's always changing. It's not like you could stop it. So Klipas Nega is like an energy. If you're tapping into it, what are you going to do with that energy? Where is it going to go? Is it going to elevate me as a human being or is it going to bring me down? And it's a pretty intense concept, right? So that means that every single time I'm engaging with Klipas Nega, which is like literally everything in our world, sleeping, eating, driving, speaking, any activity that we do, any sort of interaction that we have that's permissible, is Klipas Nega. So in every single experience, when we're shopping for food, when we're smiling at another person, when we are walking outside, looking at the world, every single experience of our every single second of our lives is a Klipas Nega experience. And what that means is that there is always the potential for us to be raising ourselves up with that experience, elevating ourselves by showing that Hashem's light is manifest, right? Making ourselves bittul and letting in a little bit of God's light into that experience. Or we could be doing the opposite, right? And taking this very neutral experience and losing the opportunity. For some reason, the way I connect it, I connected to this concept of, I think it's called the sliding door theory. You could tell me if I'm wrong, but I think there's this concept in psychology when it comes to relationships where it's called the sliding door theory, where every single moment is an opportunity for a husband and wife to connect. So because husbands and wives are opposites, they're constantly feeling like they have to strive towards connection, to make connection. And so therefore, at any given moment, there's an opportunity for them to connect. So the example that's given is, imagine a wife, she's sitting in her kitchen, and maybe she's looking a little sad. And the husband comes into the kitchen, and he wants to get something out of the fridge. And so he just walks over to the fridge, pulls something out and walks out. Okay. So it seems neutral, right? Like that's simple. That happens all the time. And there could have been an opportunity for a connection in that interaction. He could have said, "Hey, what's going on? Are you okay? What's, you know, what's happening in your world? Is everything okay?" Like just look, even just making eye contact. She could have walked over to him and said, "You know, I'd love to catch up, or I miss you," or something like that. There is an opportunity there for them to connect. And then the window opened and then it closed, it shut. And the reason why, I don't know, for me, it connects is because we always have that sliding door opportunity all the time, right? Think about your relationships with one's husband, child, parents, siblings. You always have an opportunity to connect. Every single time you have that interaction, there's always an opportunity to take that and take it to a higher level. I can make that person feel good. I could receive the gift that they're trying to give to me. I could cheer them up. Whatever it is that's happening, there's always an opportunity for connection. There's always an opportunity to relate to this other person. So in the same way, the way I'm looking at this is Klipas Neges, an opportunity. It's a constant opportunity to engage with the world and engage with God and create connection and manifest his light. And whether it is we want to engage with it and reveal his light, or whether we're just missing the opportunities, that depends on us. I thought that we were going to get the easy way out because the Baal HaTanya is like writing this book specifically for us. And it sounds like, okay, this is going to finally be something that I can achieve. And it almost sounds like, wait, now you're making things sound even harder. So now there's like every single moment, there's an opportunity for me to connect and manifest Hashem's light. And right, it could create a lot of pressure. So first things first, I think it's important to recognize that at least now we understand that this is the truth, right? Till now, we've been like fooling ourselves in ways like, okay, fine. So I make a bracha or I do a mitzvah and that's the way I connect with Hashem. At least now we know this is the truth, that every given moment I have opportunity. Every given moment is filled with potential for me to connect or disconnect. And in just knowing the truth, yes, responsibility, but there's also a certain sense of calmness, where it's like, okay, at least I know the direction. I know what my focus should be. I know where I want to work towards. If I don't have answers, then I feel like I'm just floundering. That's really scary, right? So like not know what I'm supposed to be doing in this world. Now at least I know. It's heavy, it's a lot, it's intense, but at least I know that there's always opportunity and there's always potential. And the other piece that I think it's important to just say right now and here is that because there's constant potential and opportunity, you could always be switching things around. So let's say your day was really not that great and you missed a lot of opportunities, but the next second is another opportunity. So just like, you know, there's a famous story, and I think it's with the Baal HaTanya, but I could be wrong, where a man came to him with his son and said that my son is... he's going off the derech. He's like obsessed with horses. And he got a horse and now he's riding it all the time. He's not going to cheder as much. And the son's right there. And so I believe it was the Alter Rebbe turns to talk to this boy and says, tell me about your riding. What's it like? And he says, it's really fast and I love it. And I have this connection with my horse and it's great. And the Alter Rebbe says, okay, now what if you're trying to get somewhere and you veer a little bit off course? What happens then? Like if you're not going taking the path that you're supposed to be taking, what happens then? And the boy says, well, even if I run really, really fast and I run really, really far, I still won't get to where I'm supposed to be going because I went a tiny bit off course. And so the Alter Rebbe basically let him know that this is his answer. There's nothing wrong with horseback riding, I'm just saying here. But the idea is that there's always an opportunity. And those tiny little experiences or choices that we make are always directing us where we're going to be going. So if we make one choice, we make another choice, and another choice, it's starting to take us in a certain direction. But you always have the opportunity to make a different choice. It's not like you've made seven choices and then you're just stuck. So that's just an important thing to bring here, because I know as women, it's very easy for us to get really focused and feel the pressure. And that's not the point here. The point here is to give truth. And also the point is to be a source of comfort, that Hashem is constantly reaching out to connect. He's constantly creating opportunities for us to love him and to step into this relationship with him. And he's always there. And that's a beautiful thing to acknowledge. So I don't want you to feel pressured. I just want you to feel like I could step into that. So how do we recognize? How do we recognize these opportunities? What do they look like in our daily life? Like, let's talk about real everyday life. How do I know if this is klipas naiga, if this is shalosh klipas atameis? Am I actually revealing kedusha here? What does this look like? So first thing that is very important to recognize, and this is not what the Baal HaTanya says, but it's something to just bring in over here, is the concept of fear. Anytime a fear is coming up and you're acting from a space of fear, it's 100% not coming from a godly place. Right? If there's a pressure, if there's a fear, if there's an intensity, that's not recognizing Hashem, right? Kind of like at the beginning of class, we were talking about the Nefesh HaLakis. The Nefesh HaLakis's experience is calm. His experience is calm, it's peaceful, it's tranquil, it's flowing. It's not in any way anxiety-ridden or afraid. So if your actions, even if doing a mitzvah, is coming from a space of fear, that's not actually coming from your godly soul. It's coming from a self-centered space. I'm afraid of what's going to happen if I don't do this. I'm in a state of fear because I'm in fear for my child, right? I mean, we could start listing off the fears that we have. So the fears that are coming up with my eating habits, my drinking habits, not alcohol, I'm talking, did I drink enough water today? My driving, right? All those fears that are coming up all the time. It's so important to look at those and recognize those, because anything that's coming from a state of fear is natural. It's coming from your Nefesh HaBahamas. It's not necessarily bad, but if we're acting on that fear, it's us delving into the klipas naiga, but not coming from a godly space. It's coming from a kind of self-centered space, which is, I'm in control of myself. I have to make sure to take care of myself. If I don't hold up the world, it's all going to shatter and fall apart. So that's just the first thing to look at. Like, how could I start getting aware to where is the klipas naiga opportunity? Where's the potential in all of these moments that I may be missing? Well, if I'm having fear, concerns, anxiety, whatever, however you term it, if that's coming up, then that's an opportunity for you to look at and say, well, how can I instead approach this situation or this experience that I'm having on a daily basis? And instead of approaching that fear from a state of anxiety, where can I approach it from a state of a godly perspective, right? So let's say for me, I get into the car and I'm going to drive my kids to carpool, and immediately, I don't want to trigger anybody, but immediately comes up a video that my uncle sent to our chat of a car crash that happened in Lakewood. And right, that's just how fast things are happening in my head. So that's what's happening. And I'm driving, neutral activity, right? I'm driving my kids to school. This doesn't seem to be anything to do with God or Judaism or Torah, right? But it is, because I'm in a shama, in a guf, and I have an opportunity right here to express God, to manifest him in my world, okay? What does that look like? So specifically in my situation, there's all sorts of ways to manifest his light while you're driving. For some people, it could be, you know, thinking about Hashem, davening while you're driving, talking to your kids in a way of really seeing them as neshamais. There's probably a million different ways of doing this. But for me specifically, I have the direction because I have a fear now. So I have what to work through to reveal God, right? So I have this fear of, God forbid now, getting into a car crash or some other crazy driver or something happening, right? So me needing to work away from that fear, and instead of feeling like I am the one who's driving this car. I am the one responsible for my children's lives, and everything is weighing on me. And instead coming to a space of recognizing that that's not the truth, right? The real truth is, yes, I am driving the car, but Hashem is in control. Hashem is taking care of me. Hashem wants what's best for me. Hashem is always looking towards what? Hashem is there for me. Hashem supports me. Hashem loves me, right? So redirecting that fear to come to a space of really trusting him is manifesting Hashem's love, kindness, our relationship into a super neutral experience, right? That's manifesting his light. And what did I do? I pushed myself aside. I pushed away my concerns, my fear, the Nefesh of Bahamas that's fighting for, right, that operating system that's fighting for my attention. And instead I'm veering to a totally different operating system that's not coming from a space of Nefesh of Bahamas. And instead it's a godly perspective. There's a higher being here. There's a God and he's in control. And I'm going to lean on that. So when I'm approaching the driver's seat and I'm sitting down, I'm thinking about him and how much he cares about me. And I'm thinking about my children, how much he cares about them. And now I'm driving from a godly space, from a holy space. I revealed him. I pushed myself aside, my concerns, my fears, and I revealed his light. He's in control. He wants what's best for me. Okay. And this can happen everywhere and all the time with every single concern that you're having. And if there's no fears, that's obviously going to happen as well. The next way you might start hearing where there's opportunity to reveal God, those potential moments to reveal God, is any moments that you're feeling disempowered. So any disempowering thoughts are not coming from your Nefesh HaLakis, because your Nefesh HaLakis, again, is in a state of absolute empowerment. It's not ever feeling afraid or discouraged or shame or less than. It's not in that experience, because it's literally, imagine that Hashem is in a constant state of just looking at Hashem and basking in his glory. There's no way that it could experience anything other than that. Your Neshama is the source of empowerment all the time. So if any sort of disempowering thoughts are coming up for you, that's definitely not coming from a state of Nefesh HaLakis. That's coming from your Nefesh Bahamas. And it's feeding you and your experience to approach the Klipas Nega in your world and not elevate it, right? So let's say So let's say I have a belief about myself that I'm terrible at remembering names. Okay, so this is a belief I have about myself. I have a lot of evidence for that. I'm always forgetting people's names. Now, that lack of confidence in myself in remembering people's names is coming from my Nefesh HaBahamas, right? Very short-sighted, not seeing the greatness, not having the confidence. That's a voice that's coming from my Nefesh HaBahamas. Now, how is that affecting the opportunities for Klipas Nega that I have in a constant basis? Now, because I have that thought process coming from my Nefesh HaBahamas all the time, so when I'm meeting someone, they'll say their name, and it's literally in one ear, out the other, because I can't even hear. So I can't even connect with that person, remember their name, because it's not even a possibility for me, because I have this disempowering thought constantly berating me and telling me that I can't do this. As opposed to a Nefesh HaLakis thought, which is, of course I have the ability to remember somebody's name, and then I'm approaching my real world, a very simple, neutral interaction, which is just meeting someone, right? When you look at someone, you meet someone at the market, you're not thinking like, oh, this is an opportunity to reveal God in the world. Right, this is Klipas Nega. You're shopping, you're reaching for the cheese, someone reaches for the cheese at the same time, like, oh, hi, how are you? What's your name? Right? Who would think that this is an opportunity to connect with Hashem and manifest his light into the world? But for me, because I have that disempowering thought, this is an opportunity for me to reveal godliness in the world. How am I doing that inside of myself? I'm not listening to the voice of the Nefesh HaBahamas, which is telling me you're terrible at remembering names. I'm listening to the voice of the Nefesh HaLakis, which is empowering, saying, of course, you have infinite ability. You have infinite potential. You are able to remember somebody's name. So now in this interaction, If I'm able to switch over to a different operating system, now I could hear this person, connect with this person, remember their name, and I've revealed Hashem's light in the world inside of myself, because instead of operating from this system, I've operated from a godly perspective, a godly system. And who knows the opportunity and the potential in that relationship even, right? Who knows? This person could become my best friend. But I could have totally missed all that opportunity simply because of a belief coming from my Nefesh HaBahamas. Okay? So it's important to just like make these things really practical in our everyday life. The last thing that I think helps us hear if there is maybe an opportunity for us to see the potential and opening a sliding door moment in our everyday life is if there's a lack of joy or a lack of courage, mainly joy, because the Nefesh HaLikus is in a constant state of absolute ecstasy. It's experiencing God. There's no greater delights than basking in his glory. So the Nefesh HaLikus is in that space. It's constantly filled with joy. And if we're experiencing anything other than that joy, then we're in a different space. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm not demanding everybody to be high on life all the time. An opportunity for joy. And for some reason, something inside you is stopping you from taking that opportunity, then maybe that's the voice of the Nefesh HaBahamas, right? With those disempowering thoughts. You don't deserve joy. You don't deserve to experience this happiness. It's too scary to experience happiness. What's going to happen after? You're going to plummet. You're going to feel disappointment. That's not fun, right? So any of those thoughts, those disempowering thoughts that are preventing you from experiencing joy are definitely the voice of the Nefesh HaBahamas, which are not allowing you to enter into, let's say, a Klipas Nega experience and really experience the potential for it. So the example that pops into my head right now, because I have this thought constantly, is sitting in the car with all of my kids, right? Seems like a very neutral experience. Now, what if I feel like, hey, I want to actually allow myself to experience the joy of sitting in the car with my kids? Baruch Hashem, like we're all together. This chair. Yeah. We're all together. We're sitting together. We're going to school. It's a beautiful new day. Or we're going on a trip. We're going to learn new things. Immediately, what happens is, oh no, that's scary. It's scary to experience the joy. It's scary to experience, think about all the brachas that I have in my life, the blessings that Hashem is constantly giving me, right? So I'm like, you could hear the operating systems fighting over me in this moment, right? This moment of just acknowledging that I'm in a car with my kids. It seems so neutral, but there's so much happening. And if I could step into the joy, take the courage to step into the joy and say, I know that there are fears. I know that there are things that want to prevent me from experiencing the joy. But right now, in this moment, I want to just bask in the glory of me and my children right now. And thank Hashem with humility, with a sense of humbleness that he gives me so much bracha in my life to be able to have, Baruch Hashem, 4 healthy children. I want to be in that space, just even for this moment. That was me pushing aside, right? Pushing aside having the ability to surrender the concerns that I have, the isness of me, of Hindi saying, no, it's me. I have to take care of everybody. And instead, step into that space of Hashem is taking care of me. Hashem is taking care of all of us. He gives me such a tremendous amount of bracha in my life. How can I just, in this moment, just bask in it? And maybe it won't last longer than 10 seconds, because maybe it's hard for me to be in that space. But those 10 seconds, I was manifesting his light into my world, into my neshama, into my home, right, into my family. And my kids could see that and tap into that. That's a tremendous, powerful energy. So that's just a few ways for you to kind of listen out to see where is the opportunity in all the neutrality that I'm experiencing in a constant state, on a constant day-to-day basis, and where can I start hearing the difference between the voice of the Nefesh HaLikus and the voice of the Nefesh HaBahamas, and how I can take that very Nefesh Klipas Nega experience and treat it like it's one that has so much potential, and see where I could bring that. Either I could elevate myself or I could drown in it, and I could drag myself down with it. The examples that the Alter Rebbe actually give are interesting. So he gives the example of a person who drinks spiced wine and eats fatty foods, just to kind of bring us back to the actual parak of Tanya. So there, the example that the Alter Rebbe says is someone would probably say, oh, spiced wine, fatty foods, why would you eat that stuff? You know, it's indulgence. The Alter Rebbe doesn't have that perspective. The Alter Rebbe has the perspective that if it is permissible, then it's not indulgence to engage in it. It's a beautiful thing. Hashem allows us to drink wine. Hashem allows us to eat delicious foods. But what's important is that it's not just for self-indulgence or to preserve my body so that I could continue living. It's also about revealing godliness in this world. So I make the bracha on it, or I decide that I'm going to drink this water so that I could teach Divrei Torah, or I could, it's not like everything has to have an explanation for it. But if I'm the type of person who is acknowledging God in my life on a constant basis, then whatever I'm doing, whatever I'm engaging with, I'm engaging with the potential that's in there to elevate it. Okay? Very important piece. Hashem doesn't want us to suffer. Hashem wants us to appreciate this world, but Hashem also wants us to manifest the light, the opportunity in this world. Before the Alter Rebbe brought that, a lot of people would try to make themselves suffer because the world was wrong, the world was sheker, the world is a lie. And in truth, yes, the world is not exactly telling us the perfect truth, right? In ways, the world is concealing Hashem, but it hides the truth. And we have the ability to let that story unfold and really bring the truth out to our experience and to others. That's what we're here for. So that's just a very important piece. And the Alter Rebbe gives that example, spiced wines and fatty foods. And he also gives this great example of saying a joke. So technically, people probably would come from the perspective of like, don't be frivolous. Don't just like say funny things. Life is very serious. We have to make sure to be focused. And the Alter Rebbe gives this example of the Gemara, where there was a Tana, Rava, who said a joke before he actually taught his class. Every rabbi now says a joke before he starts a speech. And the idea there is that he's saying the joke. Joke is a neutral thing, right? It makes us laugh. What's the holiness in a joke? But really, the Alter Rebbe explains with quoting that Gemara is there was a purpose to the joke. The joke opened up his students to relax and receive the Torah that he was about to give to them. It wasn't just a joke. It wasn't just frivolous. It had a purpose to it. That purpose revealed the potential for godliness in it. Technically, it's just klipas nega. It's neutral ground. It's an appropriate joke. But the joke itself was elevated because of who he was. He was broadening. He was opening up his students' minds so that they would be able to. So those two examples the Alter Rebbe brings in order to kind of give us context for what he's talking about here. Everything is neutral and everything has the ability to be elevated. Now, the Alter Rebbe finishes off the parak with talking about the harm. And he says that there are two things that might happen if we engage with klipas nega and we don't grasp the opportunity and the potential there and elevate it. There's two things that happen. First of all, we bring ourselves down, which is hard enough. And we also disconnect in our relationship with Hashem, which is a very painful experience as well. And just like we've all experienced when we do something wrong, so in ways like I made a mistake, if I just correct the mistake, it's not enough, right? I also have to apologize to the person that I hurt. I also have to recreate the connection that was lost in this relationship. So he speaks about the fact that there's two aspects over here. Every time we engage with klipas nega and we don't take the opportunity or we really lose the opportunity, there's not just the thing itself that was wrong, there's also the relationship that needs to be repaired. And thank God we have a concept of teshuva, and Hashem gives us the ability to bounce right back to where we are. And we are in a constant state of being able to redirect and come back to ourselves, which is so beautiful. So, but it's just an important piece that it's not just the act itself that, oh, I made a mistake. It's also the relationship that was hurt. And that's something we don't necessarily acknowledge all the time, right? Especially if we miss out on doing a mitzvah and our relationship with God is kind of transactional and it's like, oh, I did an avera, oops. But it's not just oops, it's a relationship. So I have to work through what I did when I said that lashon hara about that person. And I also have to apologize to that person because that person was hurt. It's not just what was said, the damage that was done. It was the person, right? Or if I miss an opportunity to connect with Hashem and do a certain mitzvah, it's not just correcting that. So like, let's say, I don't know, the first concept that comes to mind is I miss shacharis. So there's an opportunity to make up for it at mincha, right? This is something that maybe relates more to men. But the idea is that there's an opportunity to correct the missed opportunity. But there's also the connection that I want to re-engage with Hashem. There was an opportunity lost. Now I want to make up for it. Just like the husband that comes into the kitchen and the wife who missed her opportunity to be vulnerable to her husband, or the husband who missed the opportunity to reach out and take care of his wife, there was a lack of connection there. There was a missed opportunity. So it's not just the actual situation at hand that has to be corrected. It's also the relationship that we want to engage in and see if we can correct. And then the last piece that the Alter Rebbe talks about in this parak when he's talking about all of this, he mentions worldly wisdom. And in that, he's talking about mathematics and psychology and basically all the wisdoms that are out there that are not Torah. And in the previous parak, the Alter Rebbe was talking about how when we engage with Torah, it elevates us and it creates a relationship a closer relationship than even doing a mitzvah, a closer relationship than doing anything, really, because engaging with Torah, going back to Perek Dalet and Hey, really connects us in a very deep way to God. And here the Alter Rebbe is referencing back to them and saying the opposite is true as well. When we engage with worldly wisdom, it's neutral and it's fine to engage with worldly wisdom. It's okay to study mathematics or psychology or English literature. And it's also important to understand and acknowledge that when we engage with them, it also has a more direct impact on us because it's our minds that we're engaging with it. There's, you know, let's say making a mistake like forgetting to make a bracha on a cup of water, which has an effect on you. And then there's making a mistake and engaging with worldly wisdom without any sort of purpose or acknowledgments of God. It affects you in a deeper way because your intellect is involved in it. So the Alter Rebbe is concluding this parak of Tanya, basically saying that it's neutral. It's okay to study math. It's okay to study psychology and read all sorts of things. And remember that it's even more important in those areas to make space for God to manifest Hashem's light when you're engaging with those things. Okay, so that is Perek Zayin. I think that it very much links to what I was speaking about earlier about Liora. I really feel like Liora was the type of person who saw the potential in relationships and connecting with Hashem. She was on a journey to connect with people all the time. She wanted to connect with a new person every single day. I remember her telling someone and hearing the stories after that she had made a achlata to call someone new every single night, to connect to someone, to make sure that she's not losing the opportunity that life is giving to her to reveal the potential for what is. And I think that's so inspiring, and it's something that I really live with all the time, remembering that there is an actual person out there who is living this concept, seeing the potential always in opportunities, in simple examples like sitting with your children in a car and embracing those opportunities and the potential for those opportunities as an experience to connect with Hashem, connect with yourself, connect with your joy, work towards being a more courageous person, walk away from the fears. And there was an actual person who was living that. So that's just something I wanted to share with you here. And I think that this class has been an Aliyah for Neshama. It should continue to be an Aliyah for Neshama. And every time we choose to take those simple experiences and see the potential for them, it should be an Aliyah for Neshama, remembering that, I know for myself at least, remembering that she was the inspiration behind that for me. If anyone else wants to share something about Liara, it would be beautiful to hear that. I know that a lot of family members are going to listen to this recording, even if they can't be here now, and I think it would be very heartening and beautiful for them to hear that. Yes.
Turn it around. It's beautiful in LA to have someone ask you to be their 10th, but my son, John and Leah, were asked by the Azuris to be their 10th on the top floor at Orange, and they were very touched by that. And they were such wonderful landlords, and they were just wonderful friends. And Lord, they were, every time they went over there, she'd be like, you're funny, you know, she was always so friendly to me and wonderful. And when I see her at Shoal, if she came in with the children, Joel would have a plate for her and a drink for her. And the love between the two of them was like a beam of love that, you know, you see people that are soulmates, but you really saw the connection with the love connection that they had every time they were together. And with their children, they were so loving. They were just, and Joel shared with me that they never had an argument. They were best friends, and they were always in a positive spirit together. And that is beautiful.
And hugely very special. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Can I turn this around? Is it okay? You don't want to be. Okay.
Her oldest son and my young son went to a party class together. So she's my son go over and play at the house. And she used to call me afterwards and tell me something special about my son. Like that stood out. So really, I got so inspired by her because she connected with my son's soul and saw, would point out something special about his neshama, which really opened my eyes towards my son. And I'll never forget that. And I lived with that before, you know, we became friends through our kids. And I learned so much from her, and I'm so grateful for what she is, the way she said she lived her life. She used to call somebody. So maybe that was the person that she called one night, you know, to share something special that she saw about my son. She just saw the goodness in other people she connected with.
Yeah, and then made the effort to let you know. Like really let you know that this is something special about your sons. Like that piece to me is so inspiring. Like I could be a good person. I could see the good in others. I think a lot of us try to do that. But then to make that second step of like reflecting it to someone else, bringing it to them, making them feel good, that connection piece is so powerful. It's like just one more step. So beautiful. Anyone else want to share anything?
I just want to say the thing that you brought up, our movement, and not only is Black City in the early days an amazing, but we should find it
chaotic.
Like the kids are slowing us now, and asking for songs, and like they're flashy. And not only was that, like, she took something that for the rest of us, like, I didn't want to take for granted, and she made that. Like not only the most average thing, but like the parts that we don't necessarily like find special. That was the most powerful moment. And so that's been a really okay thing for me now in the head and like kind of losing it. To think like I get this moment and I get really embrace and appreciate it.
That's so beautiful.
I know today she used to run her children to school when we went with her husband. She loved that. you know, it's a stressful time. See how she really embraced that time for those 2 blocks to get her kids out of school. It's beautiful to watch and to see.
And just like being so present with that moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
To really be in that moment. It's really hard. Like, we can't get that talk to her, but she must have been one
that. Right. Right. Yeah, and not to say that every single time she was probably successful, but the fact that we're seeing it, we're hearing it, she really worked on it.
Actually, the difference between the Yetzirah and the Yetzirah Tov then is the Yetzirah, the animalistic side of us, is that correlation, is that connecting?
Yes, that's a really good question. So the Yetzirah and Yetzirah Tov are kind of the voices that you hear, as opposed to like the operating systems. So the Yetzer Hara is not an actual neshama. It's more like, the way I look at it is almost like the nervous system is constantly like sending the messages. So the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov are like the inclinations that are trying to get you to veer to one side or to the other. That makes sense. No. So the Yetzer Tov is the voice of the animal soul, and the Yetzer Hara is the voice of the animal soul. The Yetzer, whatever. Yetzer Hara is for the animal soul. Yetzer Tov is working for the, for the godly soul. Yeah. Because also, the reason why I'm saying that is because, let's say the Yetzer Tov could tell you to do something, right? Hey, why don't you do that mitzvah? But not necessarily is it coming from the nefesh elokis. For example, being a considerate person or a compassionate person, the fact that, let's say, Am Yisrael are Baishanim, Rachmanim, Megayim L'chasadim, that's almost considered like, it's a character trait that we have. It's not necessarily something that is godly. It's almost like it's inherent. It's the way I am, right? Like, just like my personality is to be quieter. It doesn't mean like I'm more godly. It just means that that's my personality. It's not something I worked on. Right. So if the Yetzer Tov says to be compassionate towards somebody else, it's not necessarily coming from a godly place. Right. You hear how that's different. A godly place would be like, push yourself aside, the bitzel, and it's not about me. It's about this other person. So that's why I'm saying, like, not necessarily is the Yetzer Tov always coming from the nefesh elokis godly place. It could be telling you to do good things. That's a good thing. But is it a godly thing? That's different, I think. So this class and any work that happens from this class or any growth that comes from this class, God willing, all those thoughts that happen again and again and you're remembering Liora should be a true a sense for her neshama. It should be an empowering state of being for her. And I think it should also be something that sends the brachas that she wants down to this world. And I know she desperately wants all of us to be happy. She wants all of us to be godly. She wants her children to be safe and secure and happy. And every time we give the neshama more of an ascent, she's able to experience that and give us energy. It's cyclical. We're able to give to her, she's able to send to us. So there's that connection there. So every time we feel almost like resourced, stronger, more supported because we think about her and her memory, the more we're also allowing her to be more close to Hashem and give us more as well. So it's an ongoing relationship always. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Have a beautiful day.
Well,
huh? Yeah. Ends or something?